And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
All right. I'm just gonna play us in a little bit.
When are you gonna tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
Black is not bad. I used to play in a Jersey Shore band, and they couldn't pronounce my name the first gig. So when they introduced me, someone said, "Just call him Bottle of Vodka." And then up and down the Jersey Shore, I was known as Nick Bottle of Vodka.
You know? All right, let's talk guitars first, because we started doing the show before the show, but I love geeking out of guitars. This is your stage guitar.
Correct.
Right, and it's a Martin. You're the lefty.
I'm left-handed, which is a real treat.
And you're playing a Martin, acoustic electric.
Yep.
And how long you had that guitar?
This guitar I've had for, I think, about 8 years.
How many guitars do you have?
I think, and this is from since I was a kid, I think maybe about 20.
Did you keep them all?
I didn't keep all of them.
Oh, okay.
A few I sold or traded.
Right. How many do you have in rotation right now?
Rotation, basically, I have two Martin acoustics when I do my acoustic shows. When I was in my teens, when I was 16, I got a Les Paul Custom, which was a big deal. That was like the first great guitar.
Yeah.
And then when I was 17, I got a Fender Eric Clapton Signature Model Strat, left-handed, that I ordered and I had to wait for forever.
Right.
And it was the exact guitar I saw him playing when I first was first struck.
Wow.
Because he was the guy that made me want to think, like, that moved me playing lead guitar.
Right.
And then I was like, wait, you mean I can get the exact one that I saw him playing?
How crazy is that?
And when I got that, that was like the holy grail. And honestly, for 20 years, those were my only two that I played.
Right.
And that was it.
Right.
And then later, I tried other guitars and tried a couple custom-made deals and I don't know. There was always something that just
didn't.
Something was off because, you know, you don't get to try it until after it's done.
Right.
And I don't know. Those two are, if any other guitar I've ever lost, I'd survive. But those two have just been with me forever.
Yeah, man.
And I still use them. They're still kind of my main best guitars.
Right.
And they're like, you know.
Boop.
Hold.
So we have an ongoing debate on the show. Which is harder to play, acoustic or electric?
Acoustic is harder to play.
There it is. Okay, thank you. There's no debate. Okay.
Because the strings are heavier.
Right.
They're harder to press.
And with electric, there's more. My argument, I agree with you that acoustic, my argument is that there's more margin for error with an electric guitar because you can distort it.
Yes and no. If you can't control the distortion and you're kind of sloppy, it can sound very noisy.
Right.
So that's a whole other mindset.
Right.
But you reminded me when I was in high school, I heard some kids talking, you know, you overhear them talking about playing guitar.
Yeah.
And this one kid, he goes, "How long have you been playing?" He goes, "Oh, about 3 months. You any good?" He goes, "I'm okay. But with distortion, I sound pretty good." And I just remember laughing so hard at that.
Yeah. No, that's that. That's my argument. How long have you been playing?
Since I started fumbling around when I was 9 and kind of struggled a bit. And then around 12, I got a pretty good handle on your basic chords.
Right.
And then around 13 was when I just happened to watch this concert on TV. It was one of the Prince's Trust concerts.
Okay.
And I was watching it because George Harrison and Ringo Starr were on it.
Right.
So it was one of those all-star British bands. And Eric Clapton, he was like the lead guitarist for almost every band that night. And he was really on. Mm. And I was like, who is this guy? And right. and he was the first guy. One, I just, usually the solo, you'd kind of tune out and then right. wait for the singing to start.
Right.
Whereas when he played, because he's Clapton, they had his volume cranked so you could really feel it. And he played with a lot of feeling. Mm. And I was like, wow, this guy's like, he's the man. And it was the first time I was ever just totally absorbed by a guy playing a guitar solo. Mm. And then he sang his own songs. And although there are others, it was the first time I ever really paid attention. And I was like, wow, he's the lead singer and the lead guitarist. And I was like, I think I want to be like that.
Right.
And that was it. So there were other players, but he was the guy. So then around 13, 14, 15, I just kind of locked myself away. Mm. And I preferred it. You know, you're at that age, my friends wanted to hang out or play video games. And I found that after a while, I preferred to be home in my room. And I put on my CDs, and I'd play along to Beatles records, or CDs, I should say. Clapton, Cream, he was in a group that you might know, Derek and the Dominoes. Mm. And in my head, I would crank it up, and God bless my parents for letting me. They saw I had the fire and the passion, so they left me alone. And in my room, I was on stage with the Beatles. In my room, I was on stage with Eric Clapton. So in my head, I was like, boy, would I rather sit here and watch my friends play video games, or would I rather be on stage with the Beatles and Eric Clapton? And that was sort of in my brain. It wasn't like I better lock myself away and play for 3 hours. Right. It was sort of like I'd get lost and 3 hours would fly by.
How cool is that?
Well, that's the best, because you're I never called what I did practicing. I called it playing.
Right.
You know, just like with video games. You don't, if you go up to a kid, you go, you don't practice video games, do you?
Right.
No, you play them.
Right.
And you play them and play them, and then you get a little better, and then you get to the next level, right?
Right.
And then now you're better, and then after that, you know, so that was my mindset. And I think a lot of musicians who are real passionate about music.
You ever take lessons?
Yeah, I mean, I was majority self-taught, which was good. And then when I felt I went as far as I could,
right.
I took some lessons for a couple of years.
What's the best thing you learned from the lessons?
I guess just the pieces I was missing.
Okay.
Let's see. I think I didn't really know major seventh chords at the time when I was, I knew majors and minors, but I didn't know major seventh chords and how to incorporate them. I guess certain scales, I was missing some notes.
Right. I took one guitar lesson my whole life, and it changed everything. A guy named Alan Lighty, he's been on the show, and I played out, and I do mostly like arpeggio stuff, right?
Nice.
So it's nice, but 3 hours of that and you want to saw your hand off. But so we played out, and he saw, and he's like, hey, I want to come, I want to come to your house and watch you play guitar a little bit. I'm like, okay, great. So he came over, and he taught me, he said, one way, he's like, you got to articulate with your right hand.
Mm-hmm.
You get caught up in like these fancy picking patterns, and all you're worrying about is picking the pattern, but you got to learn to articulate all that as well. Yeah.
Nuance, yeah. Clarity.
And I was like, oh, wow. And that changed. That changed everything.
Yeah, my real teachers were the guys I listened to.
Yeah, my real teacher was James Taylor.
Yeah, James Taylor. Rhythm guitar guys like Pete Townsend.
Yep.
He was just like the chord master and the coolest looking rhythm guitar player I'd ever seen. Like when I watch The Who, I'm watching Pete Townsend.
All right. Scale 1 to 10. I'm throw some names out.
Okay.
You rate them as guitar player.
Okay.
Dave Matthews.
Dave Matthews, it's not my taste.
Right.
I know a lot of people like him. I guess I appreciate it looks like he tries to use your non-typical voicings for guitar,
which and is a pain in the ass to cover.
Yeah, which I know a lot of people. I obviously he's got a huge following and his band is good. I wouldn't be the best guy. It's not just something I listen to, you know. I could go through my guys if you if that's easier.
No, wait, hold on, wait, James Taylor.
Finger style. He's got the touch.
There it is.
And
1 to 10.
You know, over the years, it's I've kind of just I don't rate guitar players.
Interesting. Why not?
Because it's subjective.
Yes. That's the other debate.
So I'd rather use I'd rather say my favorite or someone I really like.
Okay. Three favorites then.
Because at the end of the day, there's plenty of non-famous musicians who are better than many of the famous musicians.
That's another argument we have, not argument, thing we say on the show all the time.
Discussion.
The music business is maddening because how good you are has very little to do with how successful you are.
The question should be, who's your favorite famous musician?
There you go. Who's your favorite
famous musician? When you're young, you have the debates, but I just say, well, these are my favorite, you know.
Right.
When I was a kid, I thought they were the best, but then I realized, well, there are a lot of people that are technically better,
right?
But for whatever reason, these guys make me want to listen to them.
So
that guy seems technically better, but I don't feel like listening to him. He doesn't move me.
Right.
This guy does. So Clapton was the start.
Okay.
And when I say Clapton, I'm kind of talking Cream era Clapton.
Okay.
Which he was arguably a different guy. Before Clapton, he had an album called played on an album called John Mayall's Blues Breakers with Eric Clapton. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know it. And that was when he was with that band, where the phrase Clapton is God came out.
Okay.
So it was before Cream. Then Derek and the Dominoes.
Yep.
Which a lot of people don't know, but they know the song Layla.
Yep.
And when I say Layla, I'm talking about
the original
rock and roll, passionate, fiery version.
Right.
Which the name of the actual band was Derek and the Dominoes, and that whole album is his most passionate, best album for me.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't know that album either, you know?
Right.
Then my second guy, it was basically Jimi Hendrix.
Yep.
As far as lead guitar goes, just watching him play, watching and listening to him play, the way he moved and how at one he was with the guitar, it was like, you know, effortless.
Yeah.
That made me go, wow. And I went through a big Jimi Hendrix phase. Then Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Okay.
When I saw him, I was like, whoa, who's this guy? And then I have a great memory of when he came out with an album called In Step, and it had songs like Crossfire and Tightrope. And there was only one other guy that was really serious about guitar in high school. We both got the album the same night, listened to it, came into school the next day, and we were like, did you hear his solo on Tightrope? Oh, man. I was like, yeah. So that was my holy trinity for lead guitar.
Okay.
And then once I exhausted those three guys, I was like, well, where do you go now?
Right.
As far as electric guitar playing goes. And then it was the Eddie Van Halen door.
Mm.
And I dabbled with that. So those are my three, if you want to call them lead guitar players.
Right.
But acoustic, it sounds like you're an acoustic guy.
Yes, sir.
For about 7 years ago, I discovered Lindsey Buckingham. You probably know his live version of Big Love.
Yep.
That kind of sums it all up right there.
That's insane.
If you watch his solo version of that song, I was like, I gotta learn that.
Right.
And then I got into his more kind of solo stuff, kind of esoteric.
Yeah.
You gotta give it a few listens, but once you do, I was like, wow, he's his finger picking. For me, he was my finger picking hero. Not that I'm, that's my main style, but I spent months.
Oh, his right hand's nuts.
I spent months trying to do some of his stuff.
It's nuts. You know John Butler?
I don't.
Oh, I'm going to change your life. John Butler's an Australian guitar player. And he plays, hold on, let me see if I can find it. He plays this, he plays Ocean. And I obviously won't do the whole thing for you, but he'd,
But you just made me think of like one of the best,
go.
Which is Tommy Emmanuel.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Which again, not very famous.
Right.
You go up to the random person, you go, hey, do you know who Tommy Emmanuel is? And if they don't play guitar, they don't know who
he
is.
They don't know who he is.
Guthrie Govan, you ever heard of him?
No.
One of the best electric guitar players on the planet.
Really?
And
I'll have to play for you later. I can't get
Yeah, and it's fine. And he plays in...
What's his name?
Guthrie Govan.
Guthrie Govan.
I saw an interview of the guitar player from the band Kansas.
Okay.
And someone asked him, who's the guy that makes you want to... That really kind of blows your mind. He goes, well, Guthrie Govan makes me want to burn all my guitars. And I said, whoa.
Yeah.
I got to check this guy out. And it was like... I did feel like I may be looking at the greatest guitar player on the planet.
Guthrie Govan.
Guthrie Govan.
All right. Thank you.
That's because... You say James Taylor, he'll play it. You say Eddie Van Halen, he'll play it.
Oh, wow.
You say Yngwie Malmsteen, he'll play it. You name every great guitar player, he can play it. You say funk, he'll do these like... like, you want to talk about a fast rhythm man. And then he plays in a band now called The Aristocrats, three guys... The drummer, his name is Marco Miniman, who might be one of the best drummers I've ever seen.
Wow.
And then their bass player is a guy named Ben something. He plays with Joe Satriani when they tour. But I put on one of their DVD on YouTube, and they're all instrumental. It's progressive. And I thought, I'll watch this. I'll probably, you know, I don't consider myself a progressive instrumental person. I watch about 10 minutes. The thing was like 2 hours. I watched the whole thing. And I watched it again and again and again.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Because it was not just look how skillful I am. It was musical.
Right.
And again, just I was like speechless watching him.
Yeah.
And very humble.
That's key.
Very, very humble.
Yeah, that's key.
He just,
shows
up in a t-shirt and jeans.
Yep.
And his talent, is all and him, and that band too.
Yeah.
So, those are a couple of known guys, and a couple less known guys.
Here we go.
And the one named Guthrie Govan. I'm just telling. And then there's there are a couple of young kids coming up, you know, in their 20s.
Right.
A guy named Italian kid, I say, Matteo Manicuso.
Yep.
And he plays with his fingers.
Yep. Insane.
I mean, yeah, just superhuman.
Yeah.
Australian kid, Taj Farrant.
Don't know Taj Farrant either.
He's got videos of him like 8 years old playing Randy Rhoads. And he's about 16 now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's touring the U.S.
Oh, cool.
And just...
I got to get him on.
He's... As far as players go...
Right.
And we're talking players... All that being said, at the end of the day, if I have to pick, I'm a song guy. I'd rather listen to a great song.
Right.
But I do enjoy...
I'm not the same exact way.
Someone who...
Would rather a song, but who can to watch.
Who can not just play fast, but express themselves...
Right.
...effortlessly through their instrument, and they're singing.
Right.
And... channeling their emotions in their instrument.
Right.
And you're moved by it. You're like, wow, I'm not just impressed, but moved by it.
Right. Do you, now you write your own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, before we do it, do you want to play something?
Yeah, I can play something.
What do you want to play?
So let's try. Hopefully I'm in tune. This is just, I think I'm going to keep it light and fun.
All right.
This was a song, I wanted to write a fun tune, so I got the tune, as songwriters sometimes do. And then I was at work at the time, and I was thinking of the words. And I was working a lot, so I wrote, the theme of the song is called Working.
Okay.
So basically the idea is taking a subject that doesn't sound very fun, like working. And making a fun song out of it. And it goes something like this. Well, I've been working till the end of the day, but very soon we'll be getting away from everything I have to do. Later on, we'll be meeting up with you. We'll be together till the end of the night, or maybe even till the morning light. It comes a shining through my room. Lay around until the afternoon. I dedicate a lot of time to working every day. I dedicate so much time to make that heart and pay. But you're the one who makes it easy to see that what I'm doing isn't only for me. And don't you know you make it worth it to me in every way. I begin to feel my temperature rise. From the minute I look in your eyes, there's nothing else I'd rather do than wake up in the morning next to you. I dedicate a lot of time to working oh so hard. I dedicate so much time to get us where we are. But you're the one who makes it easy to see what I'm doing isn't only for me. And don't you know you make it worth it to me in every way. And I'm not lonely, you're with me only. And I need you tonight, tonight. Yee-hoo! Come on. I dedicate a lot of time to working every day. I dedicate so much time to make that heart and pay. But you're the one who makes it easy to see that what I'm doing isn't only for me. And don't you know you make it worth it to me in every way. I begin to feel my temperature rise from the minute I had a look in your eyes. There's nothing else I'd rather do than wake up in the morning next to you. Wake up in the morning next to you. Oh yeah. Wake up in the morning next to you.
Nice, man. Nice.
Working.
Well done, man.
Thank you.
What's your process when you write? Tune first?
Yeah, usually.
Yeah. And then do you handwrite or do you type?
I prefer to write in the, I guess, handwrite mostly. Yeah,
me too. Okay, do you channel the song? Do you create the song? Is it a partnership with another being? Where does it come from?
I think all of the above.
All of the above?
Yeah. Sometimes I'll hear a song and I'll be inspired. And, oh, I want to write something like that.
Right.
And then that'll get me started. Then hopefully that'll take me off to somewhere else where I wouldn't have thought that I would have been. Then other times, I'm not thinking of anything. And you just pick up the tune, and if you're lucky, the tune, and sometimes even the words just fall out.
Right.
And I like when that happens, because I know at least consciously I wasn't trying to mimic something else or
right.
take something else and rework it.
Right.
But the idea is, as you know, is like if I told you what songs I was thinking of, you may or may not get it. I don't hear that, or oh, now that you say that, I hear a little bit,
right?
And that's okay. But when it's like blatant,
right.
then you got to kind of throw it away and start over,
right?
And then words, it'll depend. I'll have the tune, and sometimes it'll come right away. I had one song where I had the tune, and it was beautiful, and I was like, I don't want to just make up any old words for this. I'll just wait, and hopefully it'll come to me.
Mm.
And then I was, as maybe it happens to you, I was driving in the car, and the title came into my head, and I said, that's it. And I got home, and then the whole song just fell out.
Right.
And it was the right words for that song. So that's one
that's nice.
Trick is sometimes if you can, just wait.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky, it'll come to you.
But yeah, that happened to me. I did. You know about the Lifted project?
A little bit, okay. Yeah, a little bit.
So we recorded that song, right? And it's on my daughter's playlist, and we're in the car, and it starts playing, but I don't realize it's the song, and I thought I stole it, and I'm like, I am fucked because I stole a song that, like, I made like a public thing, but then it turned out she was just playing.
Well, even like guys like Paul McCartney, I think a lot of these guys in their later years, a little bit more open about where the tunes came from, mm-hmm. You know, usually they'd say, oh, I was influenced by blah, blah,
yeah.
blah.
Yeah.
But like Paul McCartney said that they're like, how do you think he wrote so much of that music and so many different styles of music? And he said, the truth is that when he was a kid, there was all this music playing all the time. And he felt he just absorbed all of it. Mm. And then over time, it all sort of kind of came back out, just kind of semi-recycled or something, you know? Right. And new tunes and obviously words came from that.
Right.
And I think that's a lot of truth. I heard a wise guy say, I forget who it was. It was someone who was, I would say, had some wisdom. And you know, he shared things that a lot of artists maybe don't want to share. And he said, the definition of originality is undetected plagiarism.
That is
probably, I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, that is pretty good. Do you, how much do you play a day? Do you play every day?
I don't have a set regimen. I just go through phases. Okay. And I just pick it up whenever I want to. But it's the only thing I really like to do.
That's amazing.
And I'll be in different modes. I might be in creative mode, mm-hmm. or I might be in guitar player mode.
Right.
So the past year, I've been more of guitar player mode, like electric guitar player mode lately.
Do you like playing out?
Yeah, I play out a lot. I used to play out a lot more. I prefer to play with a band.
Okay.
I've been doing solo acoustic for a while. And then I play out a lot now with someone you probably know, Kirsten Lee.
Yeah.
She's my buddy, and we have a duo.
Right, that's how, yeah, right.
Called
right.
Let's Duet.
Yeah.
And
we should get you guys both in here.
Yeah. And we have a good time. I'm kind of burned out on playing by myself.
Yeah.
After a while, it's like, you know, you got to change it up a little. So right. When I'm with Kirsten, one, we get along great. We vibe awesome. Off each other.
Yep.
And because she's a girl, there's like a whole set of songs that, you know, I haven't played yet that right. I can play. And especially when you're doing the bars, it's mostly covers and all that stuff.
Right.
So it's fresh. Right. You know, I was getting kind of tired of, I'd already learned and played every kind of show stopping tune that I could think of.
Right.
So that's what I do mostly these days is duos or duets with
right.
Kirsten Lee.
Oh, wonderful.
You can find her at KirstenLeeMusic.com.
Yeah. She's been hot.
I know. I saw it.
Playing out is complicated. Because of the money situation. It makes... listener, if you've heard this before, just fast forward 4 minutes. I don't understand how come musicians don't make more money.
I know the reason.
What's the reason?
Here's the reason. Hobbyists. There's professionals and there's hobbyists.
Yeah.
A guy I know, his name's Sonny Rock. He's a drummer in this area, actually. And he wrote kind of like an editorial or an op-ed, if you want to call it. But basically, he kind of summed it up. And maybe you met people that play as a hobby. Mm. Yeah, we got a band, you know. We don't play for money.
Right.
We just play. We have a good time and our friends come out.
I've had that.
So I know a lot of people. They have great jobs. They have all the super expensive equipment. And they're like, yeah, we don't need to get paid or get paid our work, a lot of money. So guess what? The bar owner goes, wow, these guys don't even want to get paid.
Right.
They play once a month. They bring all their friends. I pay them nothing. And we pack the house.
Right.
And in a nutshell, that is a big reason why professional musicians who, hey, this is my career, this is something I take very seriously, don't get paid. Without rambling on, that's so to this day when I meet people, yeah, we don't play for money, you know.
Yeah,
I go, well, you're the reason that the rest of us don't get any money. Yep. And have to get second jobs.
Right,
you've set the bar, you know.
Right,
and the thing is, it's your value. You know, if you say, oh, I'm $100, you know, you've now said that that's what you're like a band. So that's what your value is.
Right.
You know, and if you're a professional, passionate musician who's spent your whole life trying to be the best you can be, and I think that person's value is a little higher than $100 or $200 or $300.
I agree completely.
Call me kooky.
No, and it makes me crazy that's...
And it's even harder for if you play originals.
It's right.
So, and I've been down that road too, where literally in my youth made like nothing. Like, yeah. Here you go. Nothing.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Well, you know, it's a great opportunity. Exposure. Yeah. You're getting exposure.
You see that meme about exposure? I talked about this recently on the show. It's a meme, and one side is a bar owner, and the other side is the two pictures side by side. One's a bar owner, one's a guitar player. And the bartender says to the guitar player, hey, come and play. You know, I'm not paying, but it's great exposure. And then the guitar player says back to the bartender, hey, I'm having a bunch of friends over Sunday. Come bring your food. We're not going to pay, but it's great exposure.
Yeah.
And
yeah. And then, the other reason, too, is music's just become so devalued now. Ever since it became pretty much free.
Right.
It's not valued. You know, the value...
Do you worry about AI at all and computers making music?
I
you heard that Hendrix song?
No, I didn't. I
used to not worry about the computers at all, and then I heard that Hendrix song, and I'm like,
My thing is AI or whatever. It's that people just don't value music, you know. Mm-hmm. 30 years ago. Someone spent a lot of money on an album. They're like, boy, I spent...
Up in your room reading every line.
Yeah, I spent, you know, CDs were like, I don't know, $1.16.
Right.
So, one, you didn't get until you really hoped and thought it was worth it.
Right.
Two, you sat down and listened to the whole thing.
Yep.
And like you said, and if you had albums, you looked at the album and you went through the whole album. And if it had lyrics, you went through the lyrics.
The lyrics were...
And it was a whole ritual.
Yeah.
And... that's just not the case now. It's so it had value, and now it doesn't have value.
Yeah,
and I don't know how far down this rabbit hole you want to go. I don't want to come off too negative.
It's a negative thing.
The music industry is a negative thing.
Yeah.
I saw Daryl Hall from Hall & Oates on an interview talking about his experience coming up in the, what he called, quote unquote, the music business.
Right.
And he said it was just another word for organized crime.
Yeah.
Which kind of, you know, a lot of people say, Nick, why don't you do more? You should try to do some more with your stuff. And it's part of it's whatever issues I got going on with me.
Right.
But another part of it is that it's just deterred me so much. That I don't know.
Again, how good you are has so little to do with how successful you are that it takes.
Yeah,
it takes the you want to work in a meritocracy.
Yeah,
but music's not that.
Also, too, it's more about promotion and campaigning.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I got into music, I wanted to play and sing. Mostly because I didn't want to do any of that other stuff, you know?
Right.
Play, sing, and write.
Yep.
And now it's the... Well, it always was, but in the beginning, it was the record companies that put in the money to put in the promotion, to put in the campaign to make sure everybody knew your music, right. Whether you were that good or not.
Right.
And there is, and always was, a thing called payola.
Yeah.
They just found a loophole for it.
Right.
But... The bottom line is the reality is up until, I don't know, very, very recently, record companies or radio stations got paid to play certain songs.
Yep.
And those are the songs you heard. And if you're a kid and you hear a song on the radio, you assume, well, if it's on the radio, it must be good.
Yep.
And so for me, it was like, well, if I did meet someone who might help me, I didn't trust that they were going to rob me or do me wrong. Or I just met very unpleasant people that didn't want to help me. Mm. Or nobody that wanted to help me.
Right, right.
So I got to a point where financially, I was just, I got to do something because, and you know, I had to, unfortunately, put music sort of second.
Right.
And when I got to a certain point, I said, you know what? Unfortunately, I have to spend more of my time making money because this business has drained me of everything I've had and put me in the hole. And so what I'll do is I will do what I have to do during the day.
Right.
And just maybe just enjoy it and do it for my enjoyment mm-hmm. and see what happens.
Yeah. So, I would love to. I'm working on. I got to find a spot for it. But I think guys like you are going to. I think there's going to be a resurgence for guys like you who are really, really good at playing out because we can get covers anywhere. And you know, when you go to a bar, you're half listening anyway,
right?
But there is an experience of listening to a singer-songwriter play an original song and being in their presence while they're doing it that to me is widely ignored, and I don't know why. So I want to create I want to open a spot that's just original music.
Yeah.
And because I think that experience is an undervalued and
yeah,
there's nowhere to play
that caters for original music.
Right. And if you had a place like that, and you'd have to do it right.
So this way, people know going in they're listening original. To original music.
Right.
Hey, if you're sick of hearing Brown Eyed Girl for the billionth time,
right.
Why would you come out? Exactly. And I play that song because that's what people want to hear.
Right.
You know,
right.
Yeah, I remember seeing, do you know the, well, they're local to us, Skin and Bones, a guy named,
I don't know,
Doriano. But anyway, he was,
oh,
yeah, Doriano with the Salon.
Yeah, I know him, yeah.
His band's called Skin and Bones. Okay. Long, long time ago, he was messing around, you know, they do kind of acoustic-ish kind of stuff, and he started doing a few deep cuts and some Sabbath, and I was just hanging, and I heard this guy say something. You know, some dumb drunk guy. Play something we know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Or I had a gig. Play Sweet Caroline. Oh. Ba ba ba. And it just sounds so dumb. You know, no right. offense, but it's like, you know.
Right. No, I'm right there with you.
I'm like you're not tired of that. You're not. Tired of, you know.
Right. Well, no is the answer because those people.
We've played those songs a billion times. They haven't necessarily heard them a billion times.
Right. And they're not listening to it for the music. They're listening to it for the I'm half in the can and I want to go bop, bop, bop.
And they want to be able to join in with all their friends.
That's it. Yep.
And blah, exactly blah,
right.
blah.
Right.
But.
Play me another original, man.
Okay. I'm wondering if I think I feel bad like this.
Okay, cool.
So this is, I'll play a slow one. This is called Sweet. You're the Only One. A few people have gotten married to this song.
Really?
And I wrote this on my parents' porch. This is one of those songs that I wasn't thinking of anything. I just picked up the guitar and this is what came out. The tune first. And then the words came pretty quick.
Beautiful.
You're the only one. Things may not always be the way they should be. But I wouldn't want it any other way. There's no days. I'd rather be than here with you each and every day. You're the only one. You're the only one. Your eyes light up your face. Nothing can replace the way I feel when you look at me. A smile is all that I need. Then I believe you wouldn't want me any other way. You're the only one. You're the only
You in a relationship?
I'm not.
The idea of being the only one is... It's interesting how... I know it's important. I've always struggled with why. And I'm married 25 years. But I've always struggled with why being the only one is important. Like it feels like... It feels like you're saying I'm sacrificing... to be with you, so you should feel good about that.
In my song, or just in general?
In general, not in your song. No, in your song, it's sweet.
Thanks.
But but just the idea of, you know, committing to be monogamous and I mean, I get why it's important, but I don't get why it's important.
And you're married,
right?
Do we really want to air this? We might have to edit this part of the show out.
No,
we,
dude. The other day, so my wife's new.
My wife doesn't listen to this show.
She's so the other day. She listens off and on, like sometimes to come on the car or whatever.
This will be the part that will. Come on.
Oh, totally.
And that's the only part you'll hear.
This is what just happened. Uh-huh. We're driving in the car, and I had somebody on, and for some reason we were talking about menopause. And I go, oh my God, Trish is perimenopausal, which I just learned what that is. So, driving down the road, she goes, I want to hear one of your shows. She just randomly picks it and over the car, comes, oh yeah, Trish is perimenopausal. She's like, what the fuck? So yeah, this will definitely be the part. But I mean, I don't know. It's interesting to me that monogamy is as valued as it is. I understand it has a value, but as valued as it is interesting to me.
I, you know, I'm not single by accident. if you want to, may I mention my website?
Please, you can mention anything.
Yeah, if you like any of my songs, if you could please go to nickrocks.com, you'll hear the full band versions there. So just check that out. If you know, if you like any of the songs, and I'll probably play a couple more.
Yeah.
But to get to your question, when I wrote that song, I wrote it when I was 1 year. For me, when I was younger, I thought love was like the movies, you right. know? And that can kind of mess you up because I don't think it is like the movies. And especially, you know, I was an 80s kid, 80s, 90s, romantic comedies everywhere you go.
Yep.
And my experience has been that I don't feel like real life is like those romantic comedies. Mm. And maybe showing what the real life version would be wouldn't be as entertaining, I guess. Maybe people want the fantasy.
Right.
But it's hard, you know? Like, it's an ideal.
But you're a good-looking guy who plays out a lot. I mean, well, you are single by choice.
Yeah, but I guess I'm a little cynical.
Okay.
I know your show is about mental health and things like that. Yep. And I don't know how deep I want to get into it today, but part of, I think, why I'm single is partly due to some mental health and emotional issues that I hang ups that I have
right.
happening. The other thing that kind of deters me since I was a kid was the statistics, you know, being married. Well,
my anti-marriage rant.
Over 50, you're married. You know?
I know, but I have an anti-marriage rant that makes all the sense in the world.
But it's so, Bill Burr made a joke a long time ago. He said, hey, if you were going skydiving and they told you, hey, there's a 50% chance your chute's not going to open, I'm not jumping, so, right. you know?
Well, that's I make that same joke, but yeah. I use a bank. I'm like, yeah. if you went to a bank and over half the time you only got half your money back,
right?
You wouldn't go to the bank.
Yeah, and happily ever after, I don't know. I'm personally, if I'm being honest, kind of blocked up emotionally and mentally mm-hmm. due to some issues I have.
Okay.
Because I have met several very nice people.
Right.
And
just not...
And you know, the kind of people that you kind of, oh, when I was a kid or young, I hope someday I meet someone like this or that.
Right.
And then there's just something inside me that I don't know if it's broken or whatever. The other thing is just looking at, I feel, I don't know about going down this hole, but okay, so half divorce.
Okay.
Then the other half stay together. But then how happy are that other half? And just looking at other couples and seeming not so happy to me. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, I feel a little bad saying it, but growing up in a household with loving parents, but...
not in love?
No, I wouldn't say that, but if the first word that pops into my head isn't happy.
Okay.
And I say that with great caution because I love my parents and...
you can love people who aren't happy.
I know, but if they hear this, I don't want to upset them.
Okay.
So, but in general, it's sometimes the vibe I get. So that combined with my own personal issues.
Do you think your issues make you a better songwriter?
No.
Really?
No. No.
I'm not talking about prolific. I'm talking about the quality of what you do.
No. I think I in my head, it's a... I think it's a misconception. If you see someone who's a genius, quote unquote, and they're mentally ill,
mm-hmm.
I think they're just geniuses
who are mentally
who also
ill.
Happen to be mentally right. ill. They're not geniuses because they're mentally ill. If anything, my whatever issues I have has blocked me, especially in the last most recent years.
Mm.
As my whatever it is I'm going through has gotten worse. My inspiration and creativity has gone down, and that's partly why I'm more in probably guitar player mode.
Yep. No, do you know my story?
I don't know your whole story.
Dude, I was crazy. And I mean batshit crazy. I mean sitting in my underwear with a BB gun waiting for aliens crazy. And I had like this whole journey. Listener, you've heard it a million times. But I had this long journey. So I get to the other side of that. And it left me exactly like that. Like I, you know, I was so medicated I couldn't play guitar if I wanted to. But
right.
The thing that helped me was I just started writing about how crazy I fucking was. And the whole journey, like what it did to my family and my, you know, my 7-year-old daughter. I was taking 7 different medications all at the same time, and one of them was lithium. Lithium was toxic to me, so it was making poison. So I'm like, the drug I'm taking not to kill myself is actually killing me. And so I took a summer and just said, I'm getting off of everything. My whole world left except for my daughter, Trish. Everybody left. Everybody bailed. Trish was there for part of it. So I wound up like sticking my head in the lion's mouth and writing about it. And that helped. I don't know if it would help.
My tendency is to want to avoid and not think about it and not relive it. When I was younger, it was like all my songs are being sad, depressed, and lonely, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, enough of that. Because then you start playing out. And
I'll tell you how I solved that, too.
Go ahead.
I wrote a one-man show about my whole experience. And so it's 14 original. It's called Home From Here. It's 14 original songs. And I told the story in between. But you can only do that one time.
Right.
I can't be like you and be gigging out all the time and doing that.
Yeah. And then when you're younger, a lot of people want to show how deep they are. Ooh, I'm so deep. Look how deep I am. I'm so deep. And I went through a little bit of that problem, a little bit. But people are like, yeah, it's all right. You're deep. I get it.
Yeah.
Now lighten up a little bit.
Right. Too. I want to dance. Let's go.
Make me, lighten up a little bit, you know? Especially, all right, you're a millionaire rock star now. Your dream has come true.
Right.
I know your life's probably not perfect, but it's also not that bad either.
Right.
How about you lighten up a little bit, you know?
Right.
But there's a whole audience that seems to love all that kind of music, you know? In my later years, more recent years, knowing that, I'm going to be playing these songs out. Do I want to bring everybody down? Do I want to bring myself down? Do I want to continually relive these feelings? And the answer is no. And for me, at the end of the day, I will say, earlier on, if I went through some pain, it did, and I was able to use it to write a song about it. I felt, at least I was able to take that and create something productive.
Right.
And someone else will hear this, and maybe they felt that too.
Right.
So I've gone through that, and I've been through that.
But it's just not where you are now.
Nah, it's, I kind of, especially playing, because I'm playing mostly out in bars and clubs, people want to have a good time, and I want to have a good time.
Right.
And when I get them going, I'm a kind of a quiet guy, but I get very fired up, and I get this blast of energy where some people who, first, like Johnny Dell, and Kirsten Lee, when they first met me, they thought I was on cocaine. Because I'd be like this, how I am with you. Get up, just up there, and then boom.
Go off.
Especially if it was only 1 or 2, 3 songs.
Yeah.
I just took the energy I would typically put in a 3-hour show.
Right.
And, you know, put it,
just go without, off.
It's like a switch goes off.
Right.
It's not even a conscious thing. And I've met people that, wow, you got a lot of energy, your energy, and you're, and then when they talk to me when I'm not playing, I'm like, I can't believe I'm talking to the same person. And that's sort of my personality, I think. I go a bit extreme. I'm either very mellow or maybe down.
Right.
And if something gets me excited, I kind of go like crazy. I'm kind of
you're
one extreme. arguably maybe manic,
yeah,
extreme. I kind of go from here to here.
I'm like that, yeah.
Zero to 100.
Yeah.
But my natural state is kind of low.
Right.
And when I play, it makes me feel better. When I play for people, it makes me feel even better. And then when I play with Kirsten Lee, she's just got such, we have a nice chemistry and a good vibe that even if I'm not,
she's such a good person.
Yeah. If I'm not in the best state of mind, or maybe the crowd's just, you know, they're ignoring you, or they're, nobody showed up. When I was by myself, that would be a bummer. But if I'm with her or someone, all right, well, we'll have fun.
Right.
You know, yep. And then that's all that matters.
Yeah. Beautiful. Can you play another one?
Sure. Let's see. This is called Get It Right. When I recorded all these songs, if you notice, I've used a capo like on almost every song. I was almost going to call the CD the capo because I guess I was trying to... Maybe if I put the capo here, something else different will come up.
It does.
Or
I use capo on almost every song.
The thing is, if you lose your capo, you're screwed.
Do you know the Page capo?
Huh?
Do you know the Page capo? Oh, my friend. This is $38.
Uh-huh.
Stays on your guitar the whole time. And the reason it works great because the point of contact with the back is even. It's right dead center in the back of the neck of the guitar. So you get even pressure so you don't have to tune.
So it's like
fucking incredible.
How typical capos kind of make your guitar not in tune.
They knock you out of tune because there's different stress levels because the capo's making contact with the back of the guitar. You know, either up at the top or down at the bottom, like yours. Yours
right.
Is doing it up at the top. But this one is even all the way across,
yeah.
because the point of contact's dead center in the back.
So it's better.
It's way better. And it's $38. And you're in tune here. And you're in tune here. And you never have it, because you know, like you put a cable on, you have that nightmare that you're going to be, and you're going to have to play a whole song out of tune.
Yeah.
It never changes.
Before I go, I got to remember to write that down on my phone.
You want
and get
page,
it.
You,
I,
you
because
want page capo.
I'm severely, I've always been annoyed by regular capos.
Yeah. Oh, they're a pain. This will change your life.
All right. So let's see. I'll do, this is an old favorite called Just One Night. And this process was, I'll go into it, almost like a storyteller's. So, the song Jive Talking by Bee Gees, who are big, big inspiration as far as the craft of writing good, catchy songs.
Right.
So Jive Talking, I noticed, wow, the whole chorus is like one chord. Covers. But, you know.
All right. That's understandable.
But anyway, I noticed, wow, he wrote this super catchy melody and it's almost all one chord.
Right.
One chord. I said, that was my starting point.
Okay.
So I started, I just made sure to pick a different chord.
There you go. So it's undetected plagiarism.
Started here and I tried to stick to the one chord.
Cool.
And then it took off and then kind of, if you want to say, quote unquote, wrote itself, if you will.
Nice.
So this is called Just One Night. And it goes like this. I haven't played it in a while. Let's see. If I could feel your love for more than just one night, you could stay around and it would be alright. Cause I need someone. I need to love someone. If you could stick around for more than just a day, maybe then we both could try to find a way, make a pass in love. An everlasting love. And I bet you don't even know just what you've done to me. You came along at the perfect time. When I saw your eyes, you put a spell on me. If I could feel your love for more than just one night, you could stay around and it would be alright. Cause I need someone. I need to love someone. Cause I need a little bit more. first I give my love away, then you decide that's all you want from me. If you could stick around for more than just a day, maybe then we both could try to find a way to make a passing love, an everlasting love, a momentary lover. Just doesn't do it for me. Ooh, I need the kind of lover that stays around for an eternity. Do 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 do. 'Cause I need a little bit more than what you're giving me. Once I give my love away, then you decide that's all you want from me. If I could feel your love for more than just one night, you could stay around, then it would be alright. 'Cause I need someone, I need to love someone. If you could stick around for more than just a day, maybe then we both could try to find a way to make a passing love, an everlasting love. To make a passing love, an everlasting love. To make a passing love, an everlasting love.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
Your hand was flying, bro. That's more than one chord.
Well, that's that. That's the great thing. I started with one chord.
Right.
And I got that melody. That was like, where do I go from here? Okay, that sounds good.
That does.
And then the floodgates open. And all these chords.
Yeah.
So that was that process in a nutshell.
That's really good stuff.
So that was one where I got.
That's why that's my original club. That needs to be played. If you played that to a room full of people who knew they were that would. Well,
what has been nice is that I, you know, if you're a musician, every party I was at, I was always, Nick, bring your guitar. Nick, bring your guitar. Nick, bring your guitar. Some people, for better or for worse, I always had my guitar.
Right.
And I remember playing for, you know, I was there with a friend and the whole room were strangers. So, of course, I go to all my go-to party tunes that people will like.
Right.
And then towards the end of the night, hey, Nick, play one of yours. And the best compliment you can get is, and it's hard to share positive things people say about you without sounding like you're bragging about yourself.
No.
You know?
Yeah,
so
not bragging,
I'm always conscious of it, but many occasions we'll play a bunch of covers and Nick, play one of yours. And I played at this guy's party. He goes, that song you just played is my favorite song you played all night.
There it is.
And I had moments like that over and over and over and over again. And that's when, you know, because you have to believe in yourself. But those events made me believe that I know how to write good songs.
Yeah.
Especially if I'm throwing them in at a party. It's not like, and a lot of friends blow smoke, you know.
Right.
But when you're in a room full of strangers and you're just there with your one buddy and you visibly see and you can feel.
Right.
But when they verbally tell you, hey, man. And that was the best song I heard all night. That was my favorite song I heard all night.
Congratulations.
And then that builds up your belief and you got to believe in yourself and you got to deliver it with conviction. Like I don't know if you, and I'm a little rusty playing these tunes, but and we're in a room by ourselves,
right.
But you get me in front of people, they get the adrenaline going.
Yeah, man. How do I hire you? What's the best way to hire you?
Well, I guess Facebook's the easiest, but okay. If anyone's out there, It's kind of hard to remember how to spell Nick Bukovalis. Forget say it.
I can't even.
So I always direct people, just go to nickrocks.com. There you'll see my full name, my contact information,
perfect,
my Facebook, my Instagram. So nickrocks.com.
That's the easiest thing.
Was challenged to write a jingle for my website by Mr. Johnny Dell. You know him, Kirsten Lee's
dad. Yeah.
So,
he was in here too.
Yeah, I know. I saw it. But so Kirsten was like, hey, if you like Nick's, check him out at nickrocks.com. And that gets mentioned a lot, and people chant it, nickrocks.com, nickrocks.com. And Johnny Dell goes, why don't you write a song called nickrocks.com? And I went for it. And shall I do it?
Please.
So I said, okay. Nickrocks.com. Nickrocks.com. You know you can't go wrong. No, you can't go wrong. Nickrocks.com. 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 You know you can't go wrong. No, you can't go wrong. Nickrocks.com. Nickrocks.com, Nickrocks.com. You know you can't go wrong, no you can't go wrong. Nickrocks.com, come on, Nickrocks.com, Nickrocks.com. You know you can't go wrong, no you can't go wrong at Nickrocks.com.
That's awesome.
And Giant Dell goes, you're welcome.
That's awesome.
I even wrote one for Kirsten Lee.
A jingle for her?
Yeah, I wrote this tune that was inspired by her called I Want Me Some Kirsten Lee.
Okay.
So we added in her website. So it goes, I want me some Kirsten Lee, music.com. I need me some Kirsten Lee, music.com. Oh, how happy I would be if I had me some Kirsten Lee, music.com. At my gigs, I live for the spontaneity.
Right.
And that's what I love about live gigs is, and people will say something and I'll come up with something on the spot.
Mm.
And if it goes well, and 9 times out of 10, it kind of does. That really lights my fire.
Wow.
And then play that song you made up at,
right.
You know?
You remember, you're not old enough. Remember Mac Davis?
Yeah. Baby, don't get hooked on me. And he wrote In the Ghetto.
Right. And he used to have a variety show.
Right.
And he would write songs on the spot. Like, he'd pick someone from the audience and say, alligator. And somebody else would say, doorknob. And he'd write songs on the spot. And
I live for that.
You could do that.
So, like, a lot of times I'll say, oh, that's a good line for a song. I won't remember. I was going to give an example. Anyway, I was talking to a guy and he was looking at something on the computer and it was an actress. And I was talking to him and he wasn't paying attention. I was like, hey man, you listening? He goes, oh Nick, I'm sorry. I was lost in her baby blues. And I go, that's a good title for a song.
There you go.
And he goes, yeah, it is. And then forgot about it. And the next day he goes, where's my song? And I go, oh, you really want to go? Yeah, man, I want my song. So I went home that night and it came to me.
I love that.
Spontaneous, there's a friend of ours, a big supporter, her name's Wendy. She goes to, her and her crew come to a lot of our gigs.
Wendy Barnaby?
Yes.
Love her.
Good Wendy story. So this particular night we were playing, and let's just say she may or may not have been wearing an excessive amount of perfume.
Can happen to the best of us.
Yeah. And it was having negative effects on me and my allergies.
Understood.
And me trying to sing. And she was farther away from me than you, and I could smell her, and it was making me sneeze, and I was having trouble singing. I was like, Wendy, you're killing me. She goes, "What?" I go, "What's that perfume?" She goes, "It's Ariana Grande," you know?
Right.
And I go, "I could smell you from here." She goes, "Well, that's not a bad thing." And then I immediately launched into... She wears that Ariana Grande, Grande, but you know it's not a bad thing, that Ariana Grande, Grande, but you know it's not a bad thing. I've got allergies, you're making me sneeze, I'm begging you please, oh come on Wendy, why do you have to wear that Ariana Grande, Grande, but you know it's not a bad thing, that Ariana Grande, Grande, but you know it's not a bad thing, she wears that Ariana Grande."
Hey, Wendy.
That's for you, Wendy.
There you go. One out for Wendy.
I was like, that'd be a good jingle for her commercial.
Yeah, right? Do you... All right, so we go to nickrocks.com.
That pretty much gets you to everywhere you need to go.
All right. You ever try writing, like, a musical?
When I was a young kid... I tried to write like a quote unquote rock opera.
Yeah.
I don't remember most of it, but the concept was if I could go back in time and meet my father and be the same age, but he wouldn't know it was me.
Right.
What that would be like.
That's a cool premise.
I have a pretty special bond with my father. So it was kind of like, it was sort of about him, for him, honoring him.
Oh, that's beautiful.
But I found a way to honor him in some better ways.
All right.
Long story short, I was going to sit down and write a song. I was like, I never wrote a song for my dad. And it was around Father's Day during the pandemic, so I had time.
Mm.
And I sat down, and I started writing words first. And it came... It was very clear I wasn't able to fit what I wanted to say in a 3 or 4 minute song. Mm. So I bailed on the song and just all these basically memories of all the things he'd said, done for me that meant something to me or impacted me from the earliest I could remember, from like maybe 3 or 4 years old till about 17. And once I got on that, I wrote for about 6 to 9 hours straight.
Wow.
And nonstop. It just flowed. Tears are flowing. Emotions are flowing. Because he'd done so much.
Right.
And I probably had about over 30 pages.
Wow.
Straight. And I thought, I'll type this out. And on Father's Day, I'll read it to him. And then I'll give it to him. And I'll have it. And I'm not the best typist, so it took me like another 6 hours to type it, and I wanted it to be like, you know, no typos and right. stuff like that. So that was kind of the in that way I was able to honor my father, and I've always honored him. A lot of people, you know, after their parents die, they say, "I wish I would have said that. I wish I would have said this," or they post. They don't post it directly to the person. "Happy Father's Day to the greatest father in the world." And they're not, the father's not even tagged in it.
Right.
But if you check my posts, anything at my dad, I say, "Hey, Dad, I love you. Thank you." As if I'm speaking directly to him, like I'm talking to you.
Right.
That's how all my communications via post, you know, Facebook or Instagram, mm-hmm. are to my father. So it seems like everybody has the greatest dad and the greatest kids on the planet, but I don't feel like they, one, that it's true, mm-hmm. two, that they convey that to those kids or parents directly.
Right.
So early on, I made a point to make sure that I wasn't going to be one of those guys that, oh, I wish I would have said this or that. So long time ago, my dad and I, we, whatever, if there were any lingering things, we took care of them. And when I was able to sit down and really take my time and articulate in detail specific events and things he said that stayed with me to this day, and then tell him directly and then hand him a book,
yeah,
with it so that he could look at it whenever he wanted.
Right.
I knew that, hey, God forbid anything ever happened,
box is checked.
He knows. And when I, especially when I did that, and you probably relate to this, he goes, Nicky, my parents call me Nicky, he goes, you know, when you're a parent, you never really know if you did a good job. And he said, now I know.
Aww.
So that was,
that's awesome.
So that was better than I think any song.
Yeah.
And I wrote a song for my sister too, which you can find at nickrocks.com. And and that was another testament. I you know, at the time, wrote this song that was not generic. It was about us, mm-hmm. or what I hoped, what we were, and what I hoped we could become. And I played it to her. I think it was a Christmas gift. And she cried convulsively in my arms. And, wow, that's a... I was like, that's a powerful thing to put on a tape and have someone convulsively cry in your arms.
Yeah.
And
people cry when I sing convulsively, but for an entire... different reason.
I played You Are the Only One, the ballad I did.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago. And someone in the crowd was crying.
Mm.
And a few people did get married to it.
That's beautiful.
If you're a songwriter, you know, they're like, hey, man, we couldn't pick a song, then we heard your song. And
how good is that?
That's your song. We're getting married to your song.
How good is that?
And on some occasions, I've sung it live at weddings.
Beautiful.
For people. And if you're a songwriter, that's...
But that's it.
Those are, again, all little...
You've done your job.
Little confirmations.
Right.
Of... You're good. The goal of a real songwriter is to touch on the listener's emotions in some way. And when I see it, I've done that and feel I've done that, and that's, and that happens to you again and again and again, you know, man, I have something here.
Right.
Yep. You know?
Beautiful. You want to play us out of here? We've been at this close to an hour and a half.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you could tell, but if I get on a roll.
No, I love it. What do you want to do to get us out of here at nickrocks.com?
Let me try a song called Get It Right. And all these songs I'm doing now, all the recorded versions are full band. I do all the lead vocals, backing vocals, all the guitars. Wrote all the words, wrote all the music.
Fantastic.
Produced it myself. Had a drummer, a couple drummers, a couple bass players. Some of the tracks I play and sing everything except for the drums.
Way to go, McCartney.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And I'm lefty, so. And I learned to play bass because I was going to be, before I discovered Eric Clapton, I thought, hey, I'm left-handed. I love the Beatles. I started to get into bass lines,
right,
which was good because then when I started doing my own demos, I could write the bass line.
Right.
And I understood bass.
Right.
Or I could tell the bass player, I think we should do that. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. So this track.
Thanks for doing the show, by the way.
Thank you.
You're
for really having
good,
me.
You're good, man.
I appreciate that. I was getting warmed up here.
Well, we'll get you and Kristen back in here.
That'd be great. I don't know if this isn't perfectly in tune, but yeah, on this track, if you go to nickrocks.com, it's called Get It Right. And if you can download it, downloading is the most appreciative way because something about, what is it? You have to get like 120,000 streams to make like $20 or something like that. So if anyone wants to support any musician, if you could download their songs, you're helping them. You're really helping them, you know, and it's a dollar a song.
Right.
Which isn't a lot to ask.
Right.
But this particular one, it's called Get It Right, and hopefully I will. Let's see. life that I've been waiting for so long. I never did believe I could be so deceived, but I would soon find that I was wrong. I never did doubt you, baby. Now I'm living without you, baby, 'cause it took you a little too long to get it right. Opened up your eyes, oh what a surprise, 'cause now you realize what you have done. But it's a little late, oh, and I couldn't wait, although you're saying now that I'm the one. Now that you left me, baby, you better forget me, baby, 'cause it took you a little too long to get it right. There is only so much time that you can keep a man waiting in line, thinking and praying and hoping you'll come around. And now I'm letting go because you let me down. You know it was a time, oh, a time in my life that I'd been waiting for so long. I never did believe I could be so deceived, but I would soon find that I was wrong. I never did doubt you, baby. Now I'm living without you, baby, 'cause it took you a little too long to get it right. There is only so much time that you can keep a man waiting in line, thinking and praying and hoping you'll come around. And now I'm letting go because you let me down. You opened up your eyes, oh what a surprise, 'cause now you realize what you have done. But it's a little late, oh, and I couldn't wait, although you're saying now that I'm the one, yeah, yeah. Now that you left me, baby, you better forget me, baby, 'cause it took you a little too long to get it right. Yeah, because it took you a little too long to get it right.
Get it right, come on.